Got Stephen Caldwell, TSN soccer analyst, in about 5 minutes' time, and we'll recap, put the finishing touches on the World Cup. We'll have a Blue Jays / Marcus Stroman conversation, Dave and I, a little bit later on this hour. I think I'm a soccer guy, Dave.
You have to be after watching what we've just watched. You have to be.
If you came to me when I was like 25 years old and said, one day you'll be a soccer fan, I would have laughed in your face. I loved every moment of that tournament that I had an opportunity to watch, and I watched a lot of it. And the one thing I've never been able to do, Dave, but I feel like maybe it's time while I've got the fire, is throw a poll out there on Twitter. I got to get me a premiership team. But it can't be Man U. It can't be Man City. It can't be Liverpool. It can't be any of the... It can't be Arsenal.
You got to
can't
pick
be Chelsea.
So sleeper team.
It can't be a bandwagon scenario. I gotta jump in head first.
Leicester City.
Yeah, but Leicester City was so a one-off, right?
And so you got to find your Leicester City is what you have
to do. Well, and I know a couple of people who like Spurs, and of course the English star Harry Kane plays for Tottenham.
Might be a good place to go.
But even that almost feels too easy, because then it would feel like I'm latching on to the most famous current player and his team.
I have a hard question then, because I'm not right up with my Premier League. Jermaine Defoe still in Tottenham?
Well, see, this is where I've got to become more of a soccer guy. You know what doesn't lie? If you take 10 seconds and talk into the microphone.
I just know where that's where he went.
I can type in Jermaine
Defoe. That's where
Defoe.
He went from TFC.
Does Wikipedia tell truths or does it tell fictions?
Oh, no. It tells whatever the last person to update it was.
Did you know Jermaine Defoe has an Order of the British Empire?
I did not.
Jermaine Colin Defoe, born 7 October 1982, is an English professional footballer who plays as a striker for Premier League club AFC Bournemouth.
So he's moved again.
He's moved on.
Yeah.
So there you go, former Toronto FC.
The skill level in this tournament was so high, Scotty, and I think one of the knocks against soccer was always a lack of offense. But an interesting question for Stephen, if he has seen it firsthand, but I think in a lot of the sports now, the kids that are coming in are so skilled, and they do things in every sport, in basketball, in hockey. They do things that, you know, even a Bryce Harper coming in baseball, that seemingly only a handful of older players could do. And their skill level is ridiculous. They're in skill camps from such an early age, and they try things, and they're in, to me, the best coaches are the ones that encourage them to try things. But to me, watching this World Cup, the skill level of individuals was staggering. And even 4-2 in the finals. You know, the number of goals scored, when did you last see a 6-1 game in a World Cup? You know, or a guy scoring 3 goals. And we saw things and more offense and great goaltending, more offensive chances. Seemingly to me, we did.
Like, I'm wondering if soccer for a fan like me would be more where you pick a player and then you follow him wherever he goes. Because there's all these transfers and loans and different things that happen. And this Kylian Mbappe kid, 19 years old for France. I was tweeting
so
it out.
He's at PFG, is he not?
He's with Neymar at Paris Saint-Germain. And I'm sure somebody's going to yell at me for half mispronouncing that. But yeah, PSG out there in Paris. And I'm thinking to myself, well, if he's 19, 23 at the next World Cup, 27 at the following World Cup, he'll be 31 years old at the 2030 World Cup. Like, we've got at least, I would think, 3 more World Cups with this kid. And I don't think PSG is his only stop. I mean, he's premiership bound. He could be Spanish League.
That is a destination.
Spanish
now,
League
though.
Bound. I mean.
Yeah, it could be anyone.
This guy's going to have a ton of options. Is this a pick a team sport, or is this pick a player?
I don't mind your theory.
And follow him wherever he goes.
Yeah, I don't mind your theory, as long as you pick a Messi or a Ronaldo or whoever's next.
Well,
this kid could be next. And the speed, but the creativity of the things he did was what separated it for me. I mean, they operate at high speeds. And Croatia's first goal yesterday from right foot to left foot. Unbelievable.
That was Perisic too. That guy's a hell of a player.
Oh, but the skill to take it in full flight from the right foot to the left foot and then, by the way, just hammer it.
Yeah.
You'd fall down trying that without a ball.
Yeah, I trip on my own feet walking out the door, Pooley, let alone what these guys can do on a pitch. It's Scott MacArthur, it's Dave Poulin, it's Overdrive, TSN 1050. Stephen Caldwell, along with Christian Jack and Luke Weilman and Andy Petrillo and a number of others, did such a terrific job covering this entire tournament. And he's got some well-deserved downtime coming, but not quite yet, because Stephen is with us now on the program. So it's the day after the morning before, Stephen. Let me guess, the feet up today, cigar in hand, maybe a nice little drink. Are you allowing yourself some time to relax after the grind?
Yeah, a little bit of time just to unwind after what was, you know, an incredible World Cup, and spend some time with my two boys again. I've seen a lot of them in the last month, so yeah, it's a weird feeling today, I have to say. It's sort of you know, proud of the work that we did and covering what was a fantastic World Cup, but just kind of strange not having to get up early and put a suit on and go into the studio.
4-2 France. Did the score accurately reflect the play in yesterday's final?
It was a weird game, wasn't it? It was sort of strange. I think the VAR decision was you know, played a very prominent role, and even the goals as they sort of went in, it just seemed like, I thought Subasic was at fault for Pogba's goal, and Mbappe's probably would be a bit disappointed with that. And then, obviously, the Lloris error was huge as well. So it was just kind of a strange game. And for a World Cup final, normally you see it really tense and tight, and two sides, you know, not really opening up. But it was a strange game with the goals that went in. And I think that, you know, Croatia really played their part. They had some great periods of possession. I thought they were the better team in the first half, no doubt. And they were really rocked by that VAR decision, the handball on Perisic just before half time that Griezmann put away, of course. That, you know, affected the game. And I think it affected him a little bit. It never really could have.
Stephen, just a tremendous job, you know, from a casual soccer fan. You guys did such a great job of explaining the specifics and unique details of what went on during a game. So your crew was outstanding, and just for two straight months, by the way, not for a week-long series. But as the games went on, it just became better and better and better, and the games got so good. What stood out for me was the individual skill level of the young players. And in hockey now, we're seeing more young players come in that are higher skilled and are willing to try things. But that, to me, really stood out. Some of the goals that were scored were a creativity that you would sense the coach would be yelling, no, 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 yes, when the ball went in the net.
Yeah, some tremendous football, wasn't it? It was real, you know, fast counter-attack. First of all, I appreciate the words, Dave. Thank you for saying that. But, yeah, the Mbappe and you know, the Belgium goal against Japan was just phenomenal. You know, the corner goes in, Courtois grabs the ball, De Bruyne runs the length of the field, and, you know, two passes later, it's in the back of the net. Magnificent moments throughout the World Cup, and I heard you guys chatting a little bit before I came on here and talking about the speed that these guys operate at. It's something else, I have to say. I was fortunate enough to play a number of games in the Premier League, and I played against some of the world's best, and that was 20, 15 years ago. You know, now it's another level, and you just can't believe how quickly these guys move and how much control and balance and grace that they have. And I think Mbappe just epitomises that. He's just 19 year old, and he's just sitting there ripe and ready to become, you know, the next greatest player in the world, if not there already.
Stephen, we were talking about Mbappe before you came on, and you bring him up there. You know, Dave and I would acknowledge that we enjoy soccer, but there's a lot for both of us to learn about the game. At 19 years old, playing for PSG, he's obviously going to be a huge component of the French national team for the next decade, decade and a half. But professionally, what typically would be the career arc over the next 10 to 15 years for somebody like Mbappe, in terms of where he ends up and all of that?
Yeah, it's a great question, actually. It's a hard one to answer. I mean, at some point, you have to expect he's going to come to a Premier League or to La Liga, or even both. He's that young. He could have, you know, 3 or 4 years in Paris. try and win the Champions League with Paris, who, you know, have an incredible amount of money and talent and quality. So I'm sure he wants to achieve things with the club that he's at now. And then you would expect Real Madrid, Barcelona, Man City, Man United, Chelsea are all going to be in the hunt. Juventus have just signed Ronaldo, so, you know, they're not messing around as well. Serie A is coming back a little bit in terms of popularity and quality. So I don't really know. I got a feeling he's going to play for Real Madrid at some point in his career. He looks like a Real Madrid player to me. I can just see him in that white shirt, white shorts and white socks, just standing there and devastating defences in La Liga. So that's where I think he'll go. But I think he'll be at Paris for the next 4 or 5 years at least.
Stephen, just changing gears a little bit and looking ahead to the World Cup that will happen in North America in 2026 and the challenge that Canada has to build a team that can compete. And you've watched different countries emerge through your time in the game. And I guess you have to look for some steps to take, but John Herdman taking over the men's program now after all this success with the women's program. Just talk a little bit about the challenge we have here in Canada of taking those next steps professionally.
Yeah, it's certainly a challenge. And, you know, it's quite a new game to us here in Canada. We had some success, you know, obviously, being at World Cup a long time ago. But it's difficult. The geography of the country is difficult. We have such a, you know, a large space, and we really struggle. To me, there's important things that need to be done. I think you need to make elite soccer free. It costs too much money. It needs to be free. They need to find a way of getting the best players in the best league. And right now, there's too many options and too many choices. There's academies and there's community clubs and different areas to go. We obviously have three professional teams at the moment in Toronto FC, Montreal and Vancouver that play in MLS. We have another league that's developing, Canadian Premier League, next year. That's going to help. But in terms of that grassroots development, we need to get, you know, provincial leagues, provincial programs. We get the best players, the best young kids playing against the best of the best. And that's the only way that you get better, in my opinion. I would make it free for all kids of that level so that there's no restrictions. Just now, to me, if you're, you know, a one-parent family or you have some financial restrictions, there's not really a great way for you to get into, you know, elite soccer, I call it, sort of 12 to 17, that elite level. It's difficult. You sort of, the system's built and you kind of miss out. So we need to make sure that we get into these areas and everybody has an opportunity to play the game.
With Stephen Caldwell, a TSN soccer analyst, it's Scott MacArthur, Dave Poulin, Overdrive on TSN 1050. So if you were to pick up off of that answer, Stephen, and outline a multiple-point program that would work for you to put Canada in the best position possible to put up a good showing when we co-host the 2026 World Cup, what would that look like?
Well, we need to all get in a room and we need to start coming up with a plan together. That's the other thing, that we have a lot of different factions and different ideas in Canada. We've never really, you know, came together as a soccer community and decided this is the plan. So, you know, that's why John's been brought in. He's did it with the women's program. He has success with that. He's a good planner and builder. And, of course, he has to be a good coach as well. That's also his responsibility. But it's not his only responsibility with this men's program. And you have Jason DeVos, who was obviously a colleague of ours at TSN, now is in that development role, trying to improve coaching. It's another big thing that Jason's working on, different licenses and opportunities for coaches to develop. But I think we start now, we come up with a plan, we get everybody who, you know, the decision makers in the same room, we agree on that plan, and then we move forward, we don't look back, and we commit to it. Another thing you could say, we could go on and on about this for ages, guys, but, you know, facilities as well. We don't have enough pitches. We don't have enough areas for these kids to play. When we do have grass pitches, they're not of the quality needed to really develop that skill and that pace of a De Bruyne and a Hazard and a Mbappe. I know these kids learn on the streets, but eventually when they hit a point, you know, 13, 14 years old, they then get the best of the best. They get challenged against quality players. I had that pass in Scotland and then England when I moved down there, and I was always being challenged to what the level was, and realising that, yeah, maybe I'm, you know, a good kid in Stirling, but when I get to Glasgow, I'm, you know, one off 20, and when I get to England to Newcastle, I'm 1-0-45, so I'm always fighting that battle to prove my quality mentally as a football player. That's the environment we need to try and create here in Canada.
Stephen, thanks so much for your time, and again, congratulations to you and the rest of the crew on really what was an awesome month. It was fantastic, and those of us who were able to watch as often as we did learned a lot. So thank you for your work.
Thanks, Scott. Thanks, Dave. Appreciate it.
Okay, take care, Stephen.
Stephen Caldwell, TSN soccer analyst. He joined us on the Maple Toyota hotline. Hurry into Maple Toyota during the Toyota 2018 factory event, where you can get rates from 0%. Find out more at MapleToyota.com. So I'm getting some write-ins on Twitter, Dave. I'm getting recruited. Matt Mazzaferro says, forget about the Premier League. You need to choose Inter Milan from Serie A. Paul, go for Spurs. The Artful Dodger on Twitter. You have to follow a team, and I would suggest West Ham United. I'm a lifelong fan here. It's been a roller coaster, highs and lows.
I love it. I love loyalty. It's great. And people tell me, about loyalty through their team, no matter what happens. I respect that. That's awesome.
Well, it's the ultimate tribalism, man.
Well, sports. You as a Cubs fan, no.
Oh, God. It's almost... I was talking to somebody about this the other day, how an umpire or a referee can make a call. And if that call is controversial and it goes to the benefit of your favorite team, you will defend that call to the hilt. If that very same call in that exact same scenario goes against your team, you are fired up.
As it should be.
And tossing darts.
As it should be.
Because I'm telling you this, you want to play the hypothetical game with this for just a second, Pooley. With everything that went down with John Tavares, and Islanders are, fans are calling him Pajama Boy 2 weeks on, and all this silliness. It would be absolutely wrong of me, again, this is all hypothetical, wrong of me to sit down here with a microphone in front of my face 8 years from now if Austin Matthews hits unrestricted free agency and chooses to go play for the Phoenix or the Arizona Coyotes, or chooses in unrestricted free agency to go anywhere else, to hammer Austin Matthews if I back John Tavares' right to go wherever he wanted to in unrestricted free agency. But if the shoe was on the other foot, Leafs fans would be pretty pissed.
Oh, my. Right? Absolutely no question.
And there would be, it's not comparable.
Way it's supposed to be. It's exactly how you're supposed to be as a fan.
It's what makes it
what
great.
What does the word fan represent?
Fanatic.
Describe fanatic.
And you played in Philadelphia for a long time. Like, you know fanaticism.
Boston Bruins had every bit of it. Every bit of it. And guess what? So did that university that I went to.
The Golden Domers.
Talk about Notre Dame people, but talk about Alabama people. Talk about anybody in their respective environment. That's the way it is. I tell you what, in Boston could be as parochial a town as I lived in terms of obsession with their own sports teams. Like, you'll get in other cities, and they'll still watch the World Series if their team's not in it. If the Red Sox aren't in it, they don't even know it exists. If the New England Patriots aren't playing, it's not a football game. I mean, they are so provincial and so parochial in Boston. And, I think in Canada, you're still going to watch hockey.
But I think you could make the argument that, at least in Toronto, when it comes to the Maple Leafs, we are a Leafs town. I'm not saying people don't like hockey. But what I am saying is we are a Leafs town. We know that the junior hockey teams that play in this area struggle to draw, whether it's the Mississauga Steelheads, the Brampton Battalion have moved on to North Bay, and it's not all the same. Oshawa does quite well.
But that being said, Scotty, look at the numbers for the Stanley Cup playoffs and how many people in Toronto are watching the finals.
No question about it. No question about it. We are a Leafs town.
Yes.
First. And I mean, I think this fall is going to be just crazy, Dave. I think the anticipation, I said this last week on my own program, if, and again, I'm 39 years old, so the Leafs stunk through the 80s. But they would make the playoffs sometimes because in a 21-team league, 16 teams made it. And you actually literally, unless you were in the Patrick division where two teams missed, I think, you literally had to finish last in your division to miss the playoffs.
Yeah, fortunately, we had New Jersey and Pittsburgh to finish last.
And so some years with the Leafs, they would get in because Minnesota would stink. Or Detroit, the early Yzerman days, the Red Wings were terrible. So the Leafs would sometimes sneak in, and they might win a round if Ken Reggett stood on his head, like I think he did in 86 or 87. But most of the time they stunk, and you knew they weren't going anywhere, even if they did make the playoffs. Then the magic 92-93 year happened, where Pat Burns was a first-year head coach, Doug Gilmore's first full season with the Leafs. They acquired Andrechuk. They went on that run. I would say since the summer of 1993, and maybe even more so since the summer of 1993, because in 93 we were all obsessed with the Blue Jays because they were winning back-to-back World Series. I would say that this is the summer of the most highest anticipated Maple Leaf season in my lifetime.
The expectations have changed considerably, no question. No question.
Like with one pen hitting paper.
Well,
the John Tavares signature on a contract.
To join the group that are here, though, to join the Austin Matthews-led team.
Yes.
I think when you have a two-pronged group like that with some pretty good support players around, and I'm not delegating, down to a support role. I'm saying superstars need co-stars, and it appears, from a young standpoint in particular, there's a group that can grow together.
Well, there was so much talk about ice time.
Don't get too far ahead of it, though. That's the one cautionary tale. And the excitement level should be exactly right where it is. It's a really hard league to win in.
Mm-hmm.
It is.
The Leafs have three centermen who you'd be very comfortable having play 20 minutes a night.
Absolutely.
Right? Matthews, Tavares, and Kadri. We can have the conversation about the back end, and I think it is a worthwhile conversation. I think there is some concern there with the roster is as it is right now, but that doesn't mean it has to be addressed tomorrow or next week.
I think they'll be patient there. Judging by the way they started last year, you've still got Cali Rosen coming in, you've still got Andreas Borgman coming in, you've still got some guys that they want to get a good look at.
Well, and I can't remember, Dave, if it was you or somebody else. I was doing Leafs Lunch back in mid to late June, and I've had some guests on my own show over the last few weeks saying, hey, a month or two or three into the regular season, there may be some teams that underperform, and all of a sudden you start to look at picking at the carcass a little bit.
Well, I look at when the Duchesne deal was made last year.
Right.
Mid to late November.
Right. Would you be, flipping gears just a little bit, would you be stunned at this point, because it's now July the 16th, would you be stunned if Erik Karlsson went to training camp with the Ottawa Senators?
I would be. I thought
this has to happen.
I thought he would have been traded by now, though. The fact that it's mid-July and he hasn't been traded points to one of two things. And I think Pierre Dorion, obviously he was involved in the trade where a general manager got a lot of credit for being really, really patient over the period of maybe a year and a half.
This is Sakic, right?
And that was Joe Sakic.
Yeah.
He took a lot of heat for a year and a half for not moving Matt Duchesne. When he did move him, he got a treasure trove back. He really did. He may have as many as four or five significant pieces that are going to play for trading one player. And he essentially traded one player to Ottawa, then he traded one player out of that deal to Nashville and ended up with what he ended up with. But three or four years from now, you're going to be saying he got those five pieces from one player. So is Pierre Dorion, even being on the receiving end of that deal, paralyzed a little bit by that and the complexity of Bobby Ryan's money and the complexity of signing bonuses and whether Ottawa can include them at the same magnitude as they're being included with? The star players now are getting a lot of their dough up front. Tavares, Carey Price, that money's up front. That's July 1st payable, not when the season tickets are in or whatever it may be. And so there's a lot of things I think that are factoring in. If he does start the season there, I will be stunned.
It is, what a year it's been for them. Just like a calendar year. We've chronicled it as it's happened.
Well, and having really been working closely with them the year before, I did a lot of those games and watch them go within a game of going to the Stanley Cup Finals. You could not have predicted what happened last year. You simply couldn't have.
Would you have any reservation at all about what Erik Karlsson is now post-surgery?
No, I wouldn't.
Or do you think that this is a huge summer for him because it's now a year removed? He can train properly as opposed to rehab, because I think as far as we know, he went into the offseason healthy.
Yeah, I'm a 1.5 to 2 year plus guy on major injuries. I am. Because you lose a full season of conditioning because you're rehabbing. Rehabbing is not conditioning. It's simply not. Because you're not starting at the highest level and building from it. And with a significant injury like he had, particularly the type of player he is and was, to lose that little quarter step, that the explosive step that he had. He was using his speed so well to play defense, the thing he's probably taken the biggest knock for. Through the playoffs, he was spectacular defensively using his speed, and that simply wasn't there post-surgery.
All right, 6 o'clock hour of Overdrive. Pedro Gomez of ESPN from the All-Star Game in Washington. It's the Home Run Derby tonight. Manny Machado likely to be traded sooner rather than later by the Baltimore Orioles. We'll get into that. Fred VanVleet of your Toronto Raptors at 6:30. Dave and I, we've been waiting to get into this. We will do it on the other side. The sad ending to the Blue Jays' first half. It was a pitiful first half for this Blue Jays team. And Marcus Stroman let his frustrations out on the media post-game, and it got widely reported. We'll get into all of it. It's Scott MacArthur. It's Dave Poulin. And Overdrive is brought to you by Skip the Dishes. Skip the Dishes delivers the food you want from the restaurants you love. Place your order using the Skip the Dishes app or online at skipthedishes.com. This is TSN 1050. What was your favorite band growing up?
Oh, way too big a question. Saw a ton of live bands. Ton of live bands. Saw The Who with Keith Moon.
Oof.
Then Kenny Jones the next year. Yeah, saw a lot of really good bands. Supertramp at 1974, I think. Yeah. Massey Hall.
Massey's about to undergo a huge renovation.
What a
2 years.
Great place. I saw Rush do their All the World's a Stage live.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
They did it like five nights in a row, maybe 76. And I saw pretty much everybody going through. And then we didn't play in a conference in basketball at Notre Dame. So because you made an independent schedule, you could book concerts in, and it was, you know, an 11,000-seat building. So my freshman year, opening weekend freshman year, Bruce Springsteen, Born to Run, 1978. Ooh. Yeah, it's a pretty good kickoff to your freshman year of college. And then through freshman year, off the top of my head, Heart, Yes, Neil Young, Harry Chapin.
You didn't miss a concert.
Yeah. Yeah, no, we had everybody through there. Billy Joel played there in the spring. So terrific run of concerts. Yeah, I had a couple buddies that were music guys who saw Springsteen in 75 for the first time at Seneca College.
Springsteen is one of those dudes where, and I'm trying to think of another artist or another band, but Springsteen is like the one dude where people count how many times they've seen him live. Like,
for
and
a
I know,
reason.
Yeah, I know people who've seen, like, and I'm not just talking like 6 or 7 or 8. I know a couple of people who are up into the 60s or 70s.
Yeah, no, I'd be in the, I think I'm at 8 for him.
And like they travel to go see him.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, whatever.
Yeah.
Like they base a trip off of.
And he's worth every single second of it.
Great show. Great show live. So the Blue Jays, Dave, wrap up what I think by anyone's estimation would be a pitiful first half. And I remember before the season started saying, look, this team only has a shot this year if Josh Donaldson and Marcus Stroman and Aaron Sanchez stay healthy. And then they need a bunch of other things to also go right. Well, Josh Donaldson's hardly been on the field. When Marcus Stroman has been healthy, he hasn't pitched particularly well, and it seems like Aaron Sanchez has been hurt. When Aaron Sanchez has been healthy, he's been mediocre at best, and Stroman's been hurt. I mean, nobody's been healthy at the same time.
And then their closer's been gone.
Their closer's been gone, and that was something that I suppose it's fair to say you couldn't have foreseen. And then you've got the Yankees and the Red Sox back to being late 90s, early 2000s, mid-2000s Yankees and Red Sox, where they got a bunch of great players, and they're dominating
the entire
division.
Pendulum has swung.
So what happens after yesterday's game is at Fenway Park, the visitors' clubhouse, and apparently it's the same at Wrigley Field, the visitors' clubhouse, relative to the visitors' clubhouses in all the new stadia, is a broom closet. It is not...
I have been in it, Scotty. It is so tiny.
It is...
The whole area is so tiny. I've been in both Wrigley and
right.
Fenway. It's beyond description on how small it is. And that's the one thing that they haven't been able to alter. They've refurbished the stadiums themselves. I mean, both stadiums have been upgraded considerably.
And upgraded the home clubhouses and all that.
Absolutely. Yeah. The visitors' rooms, no, they just haven't. It's an old school stadium, tiny space. So carry on.
Because like it's meeting, the one.
There's no space, there's no room.
Right. So the post game scrums with requested four players and that day's starting pitcher now takes place outside of the clubhouse door.
Because there's no room inside.
Which happens to lead right into the concourse. This is not like there's a field level where stadium equipment and whatnot is transported and only stadium personnel can wander around. You're in the crowd.
You're with the people.
You're with the people who are waiting for players to come out to get autographs, exiting the stadium after the game, and all that stuff. And it's you know, it makes sense because Fenway Park was the one place on the tour where, back when we used to do post-game scrums with players in the clubhouse, the cameramen and women would have to ask, like, players changing in the background to move so you didn't get the ass shot. Because it's so confined and so constricted. So they've moved it outside, which makes total sense. Marcus Stroman, with no help from his defense, struggles yesterday. And the Blue Jays lose, and they drop 3 of 4 at Fenway Park. And they have been awful against the Red Sox, awful against the Yankees, the two big teams in their division this year. And Marcus does the usual deal, answers the questions post-game. And at the end of the question asking specific to the game, a reporter for the rights holder, and I just want to declare out of the gate, because I think it's important for context, that this reporter is one of my better friends in the business, and I have a ton of respect for the work that he does, and he's a terrific guy, goes off script and asks a question about Nat Bailey Stadium and pitching for the Vancouver Canadiens, because Marcus Stroman, Dave, did that back in 2012, not long after being drafted by the Blue Jays, and Vancouver is the short single-A season affiliate of the Blue Jays, the lone professional Canadian baseball team with an affiliation to a major league team. And Marcus... upset after a loss and having not had a particularly good game and his team behind him wasn't very good, more or less brushed off the question and said, that's irrelevant. That's an irrelevant question.
But he had had a heads up that the question was coming.
And I'm going to circle back to
the context.
This in just a little bit. So the scrum ends with essentially no answer to that question. And that's his prerogative. If he doesn't want to answer it, he doesn't have to answer it. My presumption would be, and I believe it's correct, the question was asked for a feature on the Vancouver Canadiens that the outlet of the guy asking the question, the one that he works for, they're piecing together a feature on the Vancouver Canadiens and whatnot. And so that's why the question was asked. It seemed out of left field and strange timing, but it was asked precisely because Marcus Stroman does not make himself available to the media at any other time. So if you're going to ask him questions about anything, you need to do it when he's available.
So speak about availability of a baseball player, first of all. So on a given day, a pitcher only has to be available on the day he pitches by Major League Baseball?
Well, no player is required to ever deal with the media on his own time. The clubhouse is open 3.5 hours before a game starts.
Okay.
If a player is at his locker, you can approach him and say, hey, if I'm a writer, I can just walk right up to his locker and ask if we can have a conversation, and I can stick the recorder in his face and record what he's saying, and then I can go up and use the quotes in a story.
And depending on which ballpark you're in, the configurations of the locker rooms can be very different.
Right.
And if the old ones, there is no room.
And if I'm a TV or a radio guy, especially TV, I would, because TV cameras are not allowed in the clubhouse, I would have to ask him to
step out
onto the field or into the dugout, and can we do a quick thing with you? Marcus typically is not agreeable to that. Again, that is his prerogative. If he doesn't want to do it, he doesn't want to do it.
Just game days for him that he's pitching.
And after the fact, after games.
After games.
Starting pitchers are not expected to talk the morning of or the day of their start pregame. They're focused. So that's why that question got asked, because it couldn't get asked in any other venue because the player chooses not to make himself available again, which is his prerogative. But the cameras go off. He's called the question irrelevant on camera. That's fine. If that's your response. Again, they're outside the clubhouse. There are fans waiting for autographs. There are people leaving the stadium. And at that point, with the cameras off, he turns to this reporter with all the other reporters around and screams, Nat bleeping Bailey, which Nat Bailey is the stadium in Vancouver. And you're asking me about Nat bleeping Bailey when we're bleeping terrible. And so there was a confrontation, but there was some words used that if the kids were around, the parents may want to cover the kids' ears. And it got reported in multiple outlets. So, you know, the fact that it was outside the clubhouse, you know, sometimes what happens in the clubhouse stays in the clubhouse, but this happened outside the clubhouse. There were multiple witnesses. It got reported by The Athletic and a bunch of different outlets. And Marcus caught some heat, enough heat that he felt, and I'm just going to read verbatim what he tweeted last night. He tweeted a link to this note that he wrote in response. Quote, media asked me a question that had absolutely nothing to do with the game, team, or my performance. We had just lost, and it's extremely frustrating. I'm not playing well. Neither are we as a team. After the camera shut off, I said word for word, I'm terrible right now. We're terrible right now. It's frustrating, and that question isn't relevant at all to a member of the media. They chose to run the we're terrible part only. That's ridiculous. It's frustrating losing. Playoff level caliber is our expectation. My passion for my team and the city of Toronto is authentic and real. I love everything about being a Blue Jay. I truly have felt Canadian since I've come to the city of Toronto. I love this team and this city to the death of me. That won't ever change. Regardless of what words are spun, I love my team and this city, always have, always will. End of his message. But this has caused a stir because it got reported and fans are... And the one thing I'm always cognizant of, Dave, is fans don't really care about player-media-player interaction. Nobody cares if somebody was difficult or is difficult to deal with. But I just want to throw a different perspective out there. Again, the question was asked. The question was asked by a reporter who had been asked to ask it for a
very often the case.
For a feature that is being done for the rights holder's broadcast, the rights holder, which is owned by the same company that owns the team. And those features that you watch, where players or coaches or mentors or front office people are quoted, that's how that work gets pieced together. So if you enjoy those features, if you enjoy what it is that you see, part of the work that goes into making those features was being done in that moment. It doesn't mean Marcus Stroman owed an answer, but to get incensed in that way strikes me as, at the very least, inappropriate.
If you ask him the same question after a win, Does he answer it?
I have no idea. I have no idea how he feels about the reporter in question. And I can tell you this, Dave, and again, I want to be very careful about this because listener doesn't care about this stuff. This is consistent behavior. It is not inconsistent behavior. It is not a one-off at all. I can say that with 110% confidence. And if you're Ross Atkins, Mark Shapiro, and Steve Phillips was on with Andy McNamara a little earlier on today and talked about this as a former general manager, and this is where I want your perspective as somebody who's been in multiple front offices and has been a mentor either as a head coach working at Notre Dame or with the Maple Leafs or the Ducks or wherever you've been. If I'm Ross Atkins or Mark Shapiro, is there a need here to sit down, as Steve Phillips suggests, with the player and come to some sort of agreement on what works and what doesn't? Because the berating of people, which is not something fans ever see because it happens off camera, the berating of people is a relatively consistent behavior. And there's a lot thrown out there on social media by this player that would be considered inspirational. Treat others how I would wish to be treated myself is not a line that I've ever seen on any of his social media, and I would have to call BS on it if I ever did see it.
Well, when you read that apology, as it were, the different part of this for today's player is he does have the social media platform, whether it be Players Tribune or whatever it may be. He has so much more of a platform, just a simple tweet like that from his handle to his however many thousands of listeners, and he can change the whole direction of what that was. Because you know, from the way it was described, and then his social media response are two totally different things. The person missing in this is the PR director for the Blue Jays, because there has to be a prelude to him that a question is coming. Now, you think that there was a prelude that this question would be coming.
Well, I believe the prelude was offered up by the reporter in explaining, because I think the reporter is a bright guy. I think
he
knows that this question would have been asked out of turn based on the forum it was being asked in. And I think he kind of eased into it by saying, well, here's kind of why I'm asking you
right.
this, blah, 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 blah.
Right, which is as it should have been. But you were a beat writer, and you got to know personalities, and you were able to develop relationships with players.
Not all the time.
Or not.
Yeah.
Yeah, or not.
This is one that's not an easy relationship to cultivate.
Right, right. But it's the player essentially has a platform now that he didn't have and can take that in a direction that he couldn't in the past.
Fair.
You know, and that's...
But
that's
one
benefit of social media for a player, because very often he's tainted by it. But in this case, with a respected member of the media like this, this is not going to go well.
Well, and I think, and again,
it's not going to go well. And is it the prerogative of someone to sit down with them? For me, it would be the first line of defense would be the PR director would sit down and say, "Hey, this doesn't work. You get to do all the branding and all the, you know, all the HDMH and all that stuff that you want to do, and your, you know, all the positive spin that came out of the rehab at Duke, and just a magnificent story all the way along. You don't get to write the narrative totally."
I'm just thinking, if I'm Mark Shapiro / Ross Atkins, my checks are cut by the same people.
You don't get
who
to
cut
write
the checks.
Narrative.
The rights holders, they're all one big happy family. And I do know this: the Blue Jays fired a couple of PR guys who were very competent in their roles, and they were not brought back around Christmas time last year. Hour number three of Overdrive coming up. Freddie Van Vliet of your Toronto Raptors. Pedro Gomez from Washington, D.C., where the Home Run Derby goes tonight, the All-Star Game tomorrow night. And Manny Machado could get moved while he's there. It's Scott MacArthur, Dave Poulin. It's Overdrive, TSN 1050.